Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Trivia Trifecta on 104.5 The Zone. Right now, John McClain joins us on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. You can follow John on Twitter, at McClain underscore on underscore NFL. Joins us today, not tomorrow, because of traveling that he's doing. John, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Excellent. We told people that told our listeners that coming up in about 15 minutes, you will have your defensive starters for players in the league, 25 or younger. We're looking forward to that.
We're going to go back over the offense for those who didn't hear.
Yep. I'll repeat. Okay. I've got that list as well.
Sounds good.
The news, I'm just going through the top news of the day across the league. T.O., he's going to give his Hall of Fame speech at UTC down in Chattanooga. We know that. Now we learn that his name is not even going to be mentioned during the ceremony. Are you surprised at all by that?
No. I mean, he thumbed his nose at the hall, and he'll get his jacket, and his bust will be in there. But if he doesn't want to be there, why should he be mentioned? Everybody knows he's part of the class, and so whatever they want to do is fine with me. I'm glad he's not there. As I mentioned before, it shortens the ceremony, and I'll be writing about Robert Brazil on Deadline, so anything to make it shorter, I'm all for.
Do you know the order of speakers yet?
I do not, and usually they get the seniors and the contributors out of the way. Bobby Bethard, the longtime general manager who was the contributors electee, he is in the early stages of dementia, so his speech has been recorded. So okay. You know it won't run long. Last year, I believe they had guys doing 30 minutes. One year they flashed light bulbs at him, and Dan Dierdorf, I think they said, unscrewed his presentation speech, the bulb, so it wouldn't go off. So there have been a lot of things, and the truth is, and I don't have a problem with it, I may be about to go to sleep, but it's their one chance to do this. And they have incredible careers and lives, and they want to thank people for it. You know, they've taken away the actual presentation. I remember when Bruce Matthews presented Mike Munchak, Bruce is up there in front of everybody with his notes, and the wind blew them, and he had to grab them, and they were out of whack, and he recovered quite nicely, kind of like when he would get beat on a play, which was rare. He always was able to adjust, and he did. And he did a tremendous job of presenting Mike Munchak. So because of T.O., it's going to be a lot of controversy continue. I'll just be glad when it's over, and we don't have to hear any more about Terrell Owens.
John, it's been a really rough week for players and disciplinary issues and things off the field. We talked about LeSean McCoy a couple days ago. Terrible story there. Now you've got this Marcell Dareus story out with the civil lawsuit that's alleging him doing all sorts of things. Not a good look for him, and a really good player for that Jacksonville defense.
There is the two guys that I like the way they explain things is Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk, because Mike's a lawyer. And I think his name is Mike McCann for Sports Illustrated. His last name's McCann.
McCann. Yep, you got it.
To read what they write. And both of them had things the last 2 days going back over the NFL rules that allows the commissioner, this has been collectively bargained, he doesn't have to wait for the judicial system to play out, because a lot of times, you know, people will not bring charges because they don't have enough evidence. But it doesn't mean somebody didn't do it. And they'll end up paying up in a civil suit. And so the thing today was about the possibility of LeSean McCoy being on the exempt list. And if LeSean McCoy's innocent, he should be turning over all of his emails, his cell phone, text messages, everything he can. He should be so angry that his former girlfriend got beaten up in his house. He should be indignant, and he hadn't been any of that. And it doesn't mean he's guilty, but it's just he's pointing out all the possibilities that can come from this, including him not being on the field till there's some type of resolution, which means he could be out a while. The Bills need to prepare for a life without LeSean McCoy, and they signed Chris Ivory, who was at Jacksonville. And like McCoy, he's 30 years old. But if you're going into it with three offensive linemen gone, Cordy Glenn traded, Richie Incognito retired, Eric Woods, center, retired, and you don't have McCoy, your running game is more than likely going to be awful.
John, you mentioned Pro Football Talk, an article at Pro Football Talk right now about Kellen Winslow II. Three different women have accused him of rape and other crimes, including forcible sodomy, kidnapping, indecent exposure, a lot of different things. Then he appears in court and looks nothing like the Kellen Winslow anyone has ever recognized before.
Almost smart attorney. Like, very smart attorney.
Almost looked like he's in a disguise in court, and the three women accusing him of rape could not identify him in court.
Wasn't that
which is
brilliant?
Probably going to get dropped.
Plus, they're all older. And all of them have said they can't. Now, there's another one coming in to testify in court, and if she can't, he's going to get off. And you've got all these multiple women accusing him, but the fact his hair's cut down, his beard's gone, he's clean-shaven. If you'd showed me a picture of then, you know, him 6 months ago compared to now, I might not have been able to pick him
out. And these women are above 50, some one of them were in their
70s. And it was always dark. One said she was, it's terrible for all of them to pick it. I remember this goes back a couple or 3 years, him in a parking lot, parked in the parking lot, and two women pull up next to him. And how do I say this, what he was doing to himself so they would see it. And they immediately call the police, and it was something about... He had pulled something, and he had to rub some kind of ointment on his member.
On his thigh?
Needed some Icy Hot.
Yeah, it was one of the greatest excuses I've ever seen. And so I thought at the time, okay, well, they're probably mistaken, even though that's a weird defense. And they were older, too. And now all these women are older, so he obviously needs mental help.
Well, and there's I guess all's fair in the courtroom with certain things, and we all acknowledge that the legal system isn't perfect, but man, this really opens up quite a loophole if this is allowed. I mean, it's incredible. He's dressed as one of the attorneys. He looks just like the attorney sitting next to him in this courtroom, and somehow it's okay, and it's going to be dropped because he was able to successfully dupe everyone in the courtroom by wearing a disguise. I don't see how that's possible.
One of the flaws in our judicial system, and one example about when you have the money to spend to get a really good attorney, the kind of defense that you can get, and that one, looking at him on that picture, that was brilliant. But it will be such a miscarriage of justice. Could all these women be wrong?
Well, speaking of attorneys, LeSean McCoy has hired the Roethlisberger lawyer, right?
Well, the one that Ray Lewis. He got Ray Lewis off from Atlanta Samuels. He's hired him. He's investigating right now. He hasn't commented. This one's going to be, it seems to me on McCoy that we're talking about one guy, two women identified him. He has to be on security cameras. They had security everywhere. The key is to find this guy and have the women say, yes, he's the one that pistol-whipped her, and ask for the specific jewelry that McCoy had been asking for, and then offer him leniency to tell why he did it. Now, would he roll over on McCoy if McCoy was guilty? Would McCoy pay him off, go up the river, X amount of dollars in your account? All kind of things could happen. But he also might just say, tell the truth. And this one's going to take a while as well. And the thing that gets me the most is both women said he was specifically asking for jewelry that was really expensive that McCoy had given her and had been trying to get her to give back. He wasn't smart enough to ask for other stuff. And that, is that a coincidence? I don't know. Maybe. And then also, as this was Mike Florio saying, the woman and McCoy should have to turn over their phones immediately and see about the text messages, emails, things they've done back and forth. And they're all on the server anyway. They can be subpoenaed. But these things are, it's just amazing how these things happen to current former NFL players, but you don't see these things happening to players in the other professional sports. And I've never heard anybody give a reasonable explanation about why the NFL just keeps having these off-the-field controversies.
John, let's run through your starting offense. You gave this to us on Tuesday, using only players 25 years old or younger. You started at quarterback with Carson Wentz.
Yep, Todd Gurley and Zeke Elliott at running back, Odell Beckham Jr., Mike Evans at wideout, Evan Engram of the Giants at tight end, Ronnie Stanley. And then even though Conklin had the knee surgery, I would put him on the list because I think he's one of the two best tackles in the league who's 25 or under. And then the only one I put who hadn't played, Quentin Nelson of guard, Trey Turner at guard, and Cody Whitehair at the center.
Now let's move to defense, and let's just start up front on the defensive line and start outside and work our way in.
Okay, I've got a 4-3 here, and I have Myles Garrett and Joey Bosa at end.
You can't go wrong with that group right there on the ends. I'm with you there.
At tackle, DeForest Buckner and Sheldon Rankins, both former number one picks, both of them played really well last year. I've got them as the two inside guys.
Okay.
My outside linebackers, Jadeveon Clowney, it's hard to believe he's still 25 because this is his fifth year in the league. And then T.J. Watt, Steelers outside linebacker, going into his second year. And then my inside linebackers, Deion Jones of the Falcons, who plays inside and is the best cover inside linebacker in the NFL. So he's between Clowney and Watt.
And it's hard to believe, by the way, that Clowney is only 25.
Yep, sure is. And Jalen Ramsey and Marshawn Lattimore, the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year from New Orleans, those are my corners.
John, if age not even a factor here, would Ramsey be your top pick at corner?
Oh, boy, Jonathan, I'm to start. You know, Marcus Peters is still 25. I took them over Peters because he's so inconsistent, but seems like he's been around forever as well. And, boy, would I put probably.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be right there.
He's a great player, but we're talking about Patrick Peters, and there's a lot of top corners in the NFL. But Ramsey, I think any team in the league, if they had a chance, you said start with one young corner, not for one season, but one young corner, I think the majority would take Jalen Ramsey.
And then Lattimore at 21 years old. Last season, he only two corners finished with a lower passer rating in coverage than Marshawn Lattimore. He was excellent.
And then my safeties, Malik Hooker from the Colts, number one pick last year, who was playing great till he got hurt and went down for the year. And the other safety, I believe, had eight interceptions right there in the Titans' backyard, Kevin Bayard. And there's a lot of good defensive backs who are 25 or younger. DBs, wide receivers, linebackers, those and running backs and wide receivers, those are the ones that had the most. The linemen were harder. It just seems like the offensive linemen seems like it's more difficult for offensive linemen to make the adjustment now. And then defensive end, you know, there were a lot of good young defensive ends, not so much on the defensive tackles for whatever reason.
You mentioned you're going with Huff and Byard. Did you consider Landon Collins with the Giants?
I did. I sure did. But last year, Byard had a better year than he did, and because Hooker was so highly rated coming out of Ohio State, and it played so great before he got hurt, I took him over Landon Collins. Another player, it's hard to believe, has been around a long time to believe that he is still not even 26 years old.
And he never misses a game. I think he's missed one game in 3 years for the New York Giants secondary.
John, we had this discussion yesterday with Greg Cosell about how defensive football is evolving, and it's starting to look more and more like you're going to have, let's say it's a 3-4 defense, you're going to have three really big guys, and you're going to have eight guys on defense that are all about 6'2" to 6'4", anywhere from 210 to 230. They're all going to look exactly the same because of how multiple offenses have become and the need for defensive players to match up on so many different types of players, especially with a no huddle. Are you starting to see more and more of that? A guy like Minka Fitzpatrick was one that we brought up, someone of his size that can do so many different things.
Well, that's very rare because most of those DBs, they're not even 6'1". And it was Bill Parcells who was asked a few years ago, why is it that the wide receivers keep getting bigger and the cornerbacks do not? It's not incremental. And he said, because so many of your cornerbacks are playing point guard in basketball. And then he went on to say about little guys like that that are quick and athletic, that it's so much easier for them in high school to play basketball, play it all year round, which you can't do with football. Talked about the lack of funds for inner city high schools, so it's so much easier to have basketball players. And I've thought about that ever since. Because the wide receivers today, you know, if one's under 6 feet, they act like he doesn't have good size. And a corner, if a corner's 6 foot, people are like, wow, man, he's tall. And if it's rarity that you get one that's 6'2", you know, you better be all over. And Fitzpatrick's like Jalen Ramsey. You know, there's people, remember when Ramsey came out, there were people say he could play safety or corner. They said the same thing about Fitzpatrick. But one of the things the Texans have done under Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel is in a lot of passing situations, they would have one lineman on the field, and they would have different alignments, like say that one lineman was J.J. Watt, and then they would have sometimes like Brian Cushing or Jadeveon Clowney standing over the center, like stand-up nose tackle. And it was all about multiple receivers. And I think they would have, let's see, one lineman, six DBs, and four linebackers on the field. And all those linebackers have to be able to run.
John McClain with us. You can join him, 615-737-1045. John, Dwight Clark passed away last month. I believe that was in June. And he was cremated. Did you see where they buried his ashes?
I did. And one of the coolest things I've ever seen, it's why it's another of the many reasons I say Eddie DeBartolo was the greatest owner in NFL history. And I defy anybody to show me any owner in sports who's done more for his players and his employees. He never left out his employees. And it was about a few months ago, he had a bunch of the 49ers come up to his spread in Montana, and they spent a few days honoring Dwight Clark. Because everybody knows you get ALS, you're going to die. It's just a matter of when. I've got a good friend here that's suffering from it. And it's just, you know, you don't know what to say. You don't know what to talk about. And because they know they're going to die. And so they all went up there to honor him. And Monday morning quarterback, which Peter King ran at the time, they let a reporter go up there and write about it. He was there in the middle of all of it. And it was just, it was so moving. And then it didn't surprise me at all when I saw that they buried his urn. He was cremated, and they buried his urn on that property right by the goalpost. DeBartolo has the goalpost moved from Candlestick Park, where Clark caught his touchdown from Joe Montana to beat the Cowboys and send them to their first Super Bowl. He had has it on his property, and there's a grave and a gravestone for Dwight Clark. I thought that's just one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
Yep, it was very fitting. John McClain is with us.
So, John, Awful Announcing reporting that it looks like Jeff Fisher, who's been talking with Fox about being a part of their television coverage, is going to be a color analyst for at least one of the Fox games throughout the year. What do you think about the possibility of Jeff Fisher in the broadcast booth?
Well, Sporting News broke that story, and I've told Jeff last year he ought to do TV. I think he'd be good at studio. I think he'd be good analyzing games. When some guys are hoping to get back in the league, as Jeff has been, then they're very reserved about criticism. But I think for Jeff to do this, it's obviously he doesn't need the money. I think for him to do this, I think it's great. I think he'll be real good, and I think if he wants to devote full-time to it, it'd be a full-time job.
Well, and let me make sure I get the source right here. You're right. The Sporting News had the original report. This is an article I'm reading at Awful Announcing. The New York Post just updated the report saying Fisher will work at least one game for Fox. September 30th, Jets-Jags. He's going to be on a TV team with Dan Helley. who does the Titans pregame here locally in Nashville. So the New York Post just reported that.
Wonder why he do just one game.
Well, I'm guessing the New York Post got info on the Jet side of it, and he's probably working a game a week, and he's going to be part of that crew, if I had to guess. Sense. But they just have the one for sure that he's going to be working.
Yeah, that would make sense.
John, he told us that he thought it would be difficult if he were going to get back into coaching for him to be in that role, because in doing prep and other meetings leading up to the actual game, he didn't think he would be he would get great info whenever he's sitting in those production meetings, because people would know that he's getting back into coaching, and he would treat those same people the same way if he were coaching and someone came in.
I think he's telling exactly what he did when he was coaching.
Yes. But on the flip side of things, he keeps his name top of mind by doing something like that, right?
Well, I think that's very smart. That's why I told him last year, and I said you're smart enough to handle it. It doesn't matter. And like Gruden, everybody knew he was going to the Raiders, and he's still sitting in those production meetings with the Chiefs, trying to get all their secrets. And I remember at the time they said they were worried about it because everything he learned he could use when he went to the Raiders, but I don't know how they handled it behind the scenes. But I'm happy for Jeff. I'm glad to see him back in football in some capacity.
John, you were correct about June Jones not handing the starting job to Johnny Manziel in Canada. Jeremiah Masoli remains the starter for Hamilton, and he's currently setting CFL records while keeping Johnny Football on the bench.
When June got there last year, he was invited by the head coach to come in and take over their offense. They were 0-8. And he came in, he did a really good job, and then that coach stepped aside, and he became a head coach, and they didn't make the playoffs, but they finished with a winning record. So then they kept June on a multi-year contract. And one of the things, when he got there, their top quarterback, I think, was injured, a former MVP. And he was traded in offseason because Jeremiah Masoli had played really well in June's system. He no longer plays exclusively the run and shoot. The way he explained to me, it's kind of a combination between the run and shoot and the West Coast system, and there were a lot of similarities between it anyway. And Masoli obviously fits it. And Masoli's been there a long time, and Johnny Manziel just got there. And as much as we think it's easy to fit in, when you're playing with less players and everybody can go in motion and three downs and bigger end zone, you can score 1 point. It takes a while to adjust. If Masoli gets hurt, then it'll be Manziel's big chance.
John, the Falcons are now among the teams who will charge at least something for at least one training camp practice. The organization announced that they're going to have a Sunday, July 29th practice. It's going to be held at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and that the tickets for the camp practice are going to be $5. I'm eager to see how this takes off across the league. They're taking this money, and it's going to the Super Bowl Committee's Improvement Project Fund. The Panthers charged $5 for a practice last season per fan. The Buccaneers, meanwhile, they're using open training camp practices as added value for season ticket members. Do you think we will see in the near future more and more teams do something like this?
The only way I think they could justify it besides greed would be to give it to charity and make that known beforehand. Come out, give us $5 for a ticket. We're donating all proceeds to this or that. And I think people would be their way of contributing. But doing it to a Super Bowl improvement fund, I mean, how much money is that going to be on the whole grand scale?
Yeah, I have no idea.
NFL owners get like $244 million from TV before they sell a ticket, and that's yearly. I never thought, when I first heard of a PSL, and I didn't know if it was personal seats license, public seat license, never heard of it. People called it both, and it's how Carolina paid for its stadium. I thought, well, that's a new team. There's no way that's going to go over. It had been in college sports, especially basketball, for a while. Now, of course, everybody does it. So it wouldn't surprise me if other teams didn't do it. And eventually, we see more practices that people have to pay for training camp. And I can tell you, because I've been going to them since 1977, there's nothing more boring than a practice. Now, fans don't think that, of course. They get really fired up, but I just I just have a problem with asking people to pay.
You brought up PSLs. Did you happen to see the report from the Las Vegas Review-Journal?
Yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
Raiders, up in the VIP club level, PSLs per seat for the new Vegas stadium, $75,000 for your
wow.
PSL.
So if you want four, that would be $300,000 before you buy your ticket for the privilege. A PFL should have to do with privilege. For the privilege of buying a ticket, mm-hmm. you've got to give them, in this case, $75,000. They have them cheaper. That's the most expensive.
The lowest is $20,000.
$75,000. But they will let you pay it out over a few months.
Of course they will.
You don't need to give them one check.
It's estimated, and I'm reading this from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, that they will generate about $160 million off of PSLs.
Well,
in that new stadium.
Good for them. If they can get it, more power to Mark Davis.
And under the scenario of these PSLs, the total cost of PSLs and two season tickets for the best seats will cost $33,927 a year if financed through 2024. That goes through your paying over the time thing. And two mid-level club seats, if financed through 2024 with the Las Vegas Raiders, will cost you $19,132 per year. Two low-end club seats would cost $13,647 a year.
John, something tells me it's going to be a slightly different clientele than the black hole of Raiders fans in Oakland.
I'm taking that money and I'm going to the Golden Knights.
Are we for sure when the final season in Oakland will be?
Nope, they do not know that. I just read about that recently. They don't know when it'll be. They know when it's going to be in L.A., but they don't know when it's in Las Vegas, and they're working on the stadium. I don't know what that means. Also, I wonder what they're going to charge for suites on the 50.
I don't know.
And
to compare Minneapolis's new stadium, it's a PSL, but they called it a stadium builder license. Which is ridiculous. But those licenses ranged from $500 to $9,500 per seat. And now we're talking $75,000 per seat for the upper tier in Vegas.
One of the many reasons I like Texans owner Bob McNair is when he was encouraged, when the stadium was built, to charge a PSL for every seat. And he said no. He thought that wasn't fair because the money was going to the stadium, but he cut it off at like the goal lines. There's a lot of seats in the lower levels. So I bought four season tickets on the first row that you don't have PSLs. And that's where my wife and her friends have sat ever since 2002. So not every stadium. And I don't know if others are like that. I don't know. I haven't paid any attention to PSLs in so long. If now you have a new stadium and everybody has to pay one, or they still have some available for your normal ticket prices. But that thing in Vegas, my goodness, if it's that in Vegas, can you imagine what it's going to be in L.A.?
I know. John, hey, thanks for rearranging the schedule this week with your travel schedule.
Thank you, Jonathan and Chad. I hope you have a great rest of the week.